Welcome to Translation Confidential. This is Peter Argandizo and Patrick Daly. And for today's episode, we are going to talk about people power. As all of you know, we spent a fair amount of time on here over the years talking about machine translation and how computing and advanced computing affects translation. I feel like we haven't spent enough time on people power. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, I think people are definitely what drives any organization, really. So I feel like now's a good time to tackle it.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with labor shortages, translator shortages. It doesn't matter what industry you talk about. They need people. And, you know, one thing that we probably don't spend enough time on when we were talking about MT is, you know, those engines are all driven by human improvement, right? So they don't get better. It's very symbiotic. And I think that's a point that's often missed. But why don't we roll in? Patrick, I understand you have a new story.
Yeah, we were talking before the show. We saw a new commercial for the new Google Pixel. And one of the things that they're advertising pretty heavily, I think it was called Instant Translate or Instant Translation. And you know, on the topic of machine translation, that's where it's pulling from in all likelihood. But like you said, people are training that engine. So, like we say, there's always a use case for machine translation. Full sentences are where you get into the danger zone. Usually it's words or phrases that will probably be correct. But the longer input you have into machine translation, just the more variance and more likelihood you're going to get something really funny, get output from it.
Well, and I like the, you know, the use case that they show in the ad, right? You know, it's a guy and he's traveling and he's, you know, he's trying to communicate with someone who's, you know, local. And I mean, hey, like I've always said, machine translation, you're trying to find a restaurant or a bathroom. Great. Outstanding. But unadulterated machine translation on its own. Well, anyway, we've talked about it 100 times. Go find that episode. You'll see how we feel about it. So why don't we get started? So when I think of people power, I'm just thinking about our organization and how much it's grown just in the last 2 years. We've doubled in size. And I think, none of that would happen without hiring really smart people. Patrick, I know a bit about the organization where you work now, too, and it's the same thing. It's like really talented people. And, I mean, that's what drives things. And I don't know, when we were prepping for the show and pulling notes together, I thought of, you know, the impact of culture. And I guess, you know, what does that mean to you, Patrick? And what do you think, how do you think culture plays into sort of the people power dynamic at a company?
Yeah, I think culture is very important if it's used and implemented correctly. Like, culture is great. It's those words painted on the wall. Every place you work basically will have their core values or whatever it might be, you know, posted on the wall so everyone can see them. And that's great, but it really doesn't mean anything unless everyone in the organization is using, living, and breathing those values all the time. So I think it's really important, basically from the top down of any organization to really be intentional about culture and really make sure that those values mean something and they're not just words on the wall. They're what everyone's doing every day. So really just being super intentional about that and just finding ways to be intentional about your culture every day. You can't just do it, you know, once a month, once a quarter, whatever it might be. It's you're living and breathing these every day.
That's a great point, Patrick. Yeah, we've all worked in different organizations where, you know, maybe it's a little bit of lip service or it's not really meant, but it makes the HR folks happy, and that's silly. I mean, it's like anything, right? If you were telling people, well, I stand by moral integrity and I do everything that's, you know, but then in your day-to-day life, you really don't live that. And I mean, and that's, to me, that's what it is for an organization as well. If you just have the words on the wall, but they don't mean anything, or even to take that a step further, like one of the things that I think of is it extends to contractors and anyone who works within the organization. You know, whether it's a subcontractor or whether it's the mail person or the person that delivers packages, because sometimes, you know, it doesn't extend beyond the four walls. In other words, they're very good to their people, but then when they work with others, you know, there's a culture of being, you know, overly demanding or, you know, having crappy payment policies or, you know, fill in the blank, right? So for me, I think it extends well beyond the walls of anyone that collaborates. And that includes customers as well. I know here at Argo. We did a whole two shows on the Argo Way, which is our set of fundamental behaviors that we follow. And, you know, I think it's key that those are exercised throughout the organization and outside of the organization as well. I know we make decisions about our customer interactions by using those fundamentals. I think it has to extend beyond the four walls as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you're living and breathing your culture, that just builds trust on all directions of the road, whether it's externally to customers, or like you said, subcontractors. I mean, at Argo, there's translators who have been working with us since day one, and they're still working with us. And there's, you know, a lot of our translators, you know, through time develop that long-term relationship with us because of our culture and how, you know, how they're treated when they work with us. So it really does, you know, speak volumes to having intentional culture.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things we talk about is, you know, when we talk about clients and their budgets, and again, these are specific to our group, but I'm sure listeners of ours and their companies, hopefully they're finding some threads or some commonality in what we're talking about. But, you know, we talk about making our clients' budgets our own budgets. In other words, you know, we spend their money as if it were our own. You know, we have to be very careful. We have to treat their projects as if they're our own. We always talk about being an extension of clients' companies. And I think that leads to sort of a better feeling of accomplishment for our team, right? To feel like you're part of something, not only our thing, but our clients' things. Like you're a vital member of their team. And we hear it often in our feedback. And I think that that's really important. And I think it leads to reduced turnover within our organization as well as with our customers. I think our customers feel like they're part of the group. I always say, you know, treating customers as if they were colleagues is really what we're talking about. I don't think enough companies, you know, live their corporate life like that. This is not meant to be a sis boom ba for Argo translation, but listen, it's not just us. There's lots of organizations that run this way. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, I think consistency plays a big part, like I said, kind of on both ways of the street, whether it's from client to us as the supplier or even from us to our suppliers as translators. You know, we keep translators on the same accounts. That keeps their translations consistent. People from our customer side know who their project manager is. They know they have that one-to-one relationship. They're like, hey, I'm going to call so-and-so. They're my project manager. So really just it builds trust and it builds consistency. And if you're consistently producing good results, that's going to be a win for everyone down the line of the supply chain.
Absolutely. And moving on to the next topic, there's a little bit of a self-confession or a little bit of a confession, I guess, that I have to make here. And, you know, as a group, we've been around, it'll be 28 years in March, or starting our 28th year in March. And, you know, one of the things we did early on is, like a lot of small businesses, we ran super lean, right? And sometimes budgets dictated who we could hire, when we could hire. And, you know, that always wasn't the best recipe for success. And where I see a change just in the last decade is this idea of hiring the best people possible every time you hire. In other words, doesn't matter, you know, what it's going to take in terms of salary or we're going to hire the best possible person for this position. And I don't know, one of the tech magnates, I'm not sure which one, said, you know, this quote, which I like, you know, the key for us, number one, has always been hiring very smart people. If we weren't still hiring great people and pushing ahead at full speed, it would be easy to fall behind and become some mediocre company. And that always resonated with me. I think that same tech person was quoted as saying that, you know, always tried to hire people that were brighter than himself, you know, really trying to find people that would add to the business. And I think for us, at least, we've been very fortunate in that way. I think I set the bar pretty low, so hiring smarter than me is pretty easy, I think. So that helps as well.
Yeah, it's a,
shut up, Patrick.
I know,
don't
right?
agree with me.
yeah, I mean, we hear all the time too from leaders in the corporate world of, you know, you want to hire people whose strengths are your weaknesses so that you really elevate everyone so that, you know, you're really just raising the whole organization by filling in those gaps. And, you know, recognizing your own shortcomings is a big part of that too, of, you know, recognizing those gaps in your business. But yeah, I mean, I think that hiring the people, we've heard the term too, it's all coming back to machine translation for me though, is, you know, garbage in, garbage out. If you're putting in bad inputs, you're going to get bad outputs. So I think, you know, the same applies for people. If you're not hiring great people, you're not going to get great results. It's a pretty simple concept, but not everyone really takes a step back and thinks about it.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. And, you know, to bring that even down to a more personal level, Patrick, and I hope you take this the right way in terms of this is a compliment. You know, we've also had to grow comfortable with the fact that, you know, people are going to come through our four walls and learn a bunch and hopefully, you know, become great colleagues, which you certainly were. And then you're happy for them when they go to the next step. And I'll tell you, in terms of a company, you know, that takes a certain level of maturity that I wouldn't say we've always had. So, you know, certainly on a personal note, I've enjoyed working with you all these years and seeing you grow. And, you know, now you took the next step. And, you know, I don't think that's a level of maturity that a lot of organizations ever achieve. I mean, I've been in various business groups, whether it was Vistage or the Lions Pride, and seen people move through. And, you know, it's not always... you know, that idea that you're helping people grow and you may see them, you know, spread their wings at some point, isn't always there. I've seen some pretty, you know, petty behavior. Though I do have to say, I really hope you lose in our fantasy football league.
No, I mean, I certainly understand it. Not the fantasy football part, because I'm going to destroy it. I'm going to destroy everyone. It's already
going to happen. Probably true.
No, but I think that, you know, businesses... just by nature, I mean, you're a little bit selfish, right? You want the best talent, you want the best people, and you don't want them to go anywhere else. So, I mean, that's a very normal reaction to that kind of thing. But I mean, I think you also have to take it with a grain of salt too, of like, you know, people are people and people are going to make their own decisions, and
absolutely,
you know, they're looking out for number one, which is typically themselves. So, I mean, it's, I think it's a thing that's, we're seeing it more and more commonly right now. I mean, there's a huge movement in the labor market as a whole. So I think, like you said, having that appreciation and really, you know, kind of being grounded in that is really going to set you up for success. And I mean, you get an opportunity to bring in an awesome new person as well, or new people even.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just the nature of the game, right? And I think that the so-called great resignation just puts an exclamation point on that. Easy for me to say.
I think too, what the big labor movement, a great resignation, whatever we want to call it, is really highlighting good companies and low lighting bad companies, because workers aren't putting up with any of the BS anymore. That's, mm-hmm, I think what we're learning. But I mean, good companies have the problem of there's too many applicants. They can't get to everyone, and they're really, you know, attracting that top talent. So, I mean, it's kind of that scale you're working with, where if you're a bad company, it's going to be harder to find people, because people aren't going to put up with the nonsense anymore,
and they may not stick around. You know, I always make it a point when I, you know, speak to customers, just asking about what their policy is and what's their return to work. And it's interesting, I've heard some pretty big companies say they've had to modulate their return to work, and the idea of, yes, everybody must be in the office for 5 days, because what's going on is people are saying, well, you know, I kind of, this new lifestyle sort of works for me. You know, I have kids in school, or I have ailing parents that I'm taking care of, or, you know, whatever those extended responsibilities are. And not having to commute gives them that gap or that bit of extra time that they can, you know, better do the things they need to do in their personal lives. And we've heard a couple a few of our clients have said they've had to modulate their return to work policy to accommodate that, to say, hey, you know, maybe we're going to go with more of a hybrid. And, you know, it kind of works to sort of the, you know, the demands of their population. And quite frankly, as a business owner, you think, well, you know, if your productivity is there and it makes your people happier, and it only feeds your culture, then that's a good thing. And I also think, like, you know, if you think of your life in general, right, like the way you live your life when you're 20 or when you're in college, and then when you're a recent graduate, and then as you get older and you're thinking about marriage, and then kids come along, and then kids leave, you know, those are like seasons, right? And things change. And I would say the same is true of a corporation. And I have to imagine that at some point, it's not right now, and it's probably hard to see, it's probably hard to understand, but I would bet in a few years, there's going to be this movement of like, hey, everybody really wants to go to work. Like, they really want to go. So, I mean, and I'm not going to mention names, but there's a monster-sized insurance company in our area that just is completely abandoning their campus. I mean, completely. And I think, wow, I guess they're thinking it's going to be a little bit longer of a stretch, so abandoning it's going to be a smart move for the next few years or something. But then at some point when people are like, boy, I sure wish I had an office, I'm heading over to this other company because they have an awesome office environment. And so I think it's a pendulum, and I think it's going to come back. And I think companies that are, you know, just saying, ah, the hell with it, we're just going to, you know, they're overreacting to the swing of the pendulum. I think it's a, I don't think that's such a smart thing.
Yeah, I think there's certain people too already looking for an office. Or like, I'm sick of sitting at home in my sweatpants all day. I want to go talk to people. I want to work with people, and I need to get out of my house to have that delineation between work and home. So
yeah,
I think, like you said, I think hybrid is going to be the ticket to the future for this one.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where we're moving, and I would imagine that at some point, you know, it'll probably amp up for some people. So it'll be interesting. Let's move on to the impact of an economic downturn. So on people and how that plays in, because I think nobody could have seen this thing coming. I mean, unless you were like thinking, oh, gee, it's almost 100 years. I think there's going to be a pandemic coming. I don't think there were too many people that were specifically prepared for this situation. So, I mean, could anyone, I guess the question, could anyone really plan for a pandemic? Is that a thing, Patrick?
I mean, to a degree, I think you can. I mean, you've always got your high-level plans. You want to account for any, you know, slight downturns, but really it being such a large economic downturn and so fast, that's what really complicates it. But I think, you know, once people had the chance to react and had the chance to really analyze everything, I mean, a lot of industries actually grew, which was pretty surprising to come out of, you know, such a sudden drop and everything.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were very fortunate in that way. I mean, the only thing that I guess I could think of is, we've knock on wood, you know, we're certainly blessed. We've grown like crazy. And it wasn't really pandemic related work. It's just, I think, again, we've take everything that we've talked about today into the formula. And I think that we're firing on all cylinders in that way. But I think it's about flexibility, right? I mean, to me, it's like, it seemed like the things that allowed us to react quickly are the things that I think go into running a good business, like disaster recovery planning. And because, of course, to me, that was what was similar is like, you know, we planned for like, okay, well, what if something happens to HQ? You know, would everybody be able to work remotely? And we were already working remotely a couple days a week, right? So going to 5 days a week wasn't that much of a stretch. I think, you know, we reacted really quickly, talking to everybody and saying, hey, is there a piece of equipment or a stand-up desk or another monitor? Like, what is it that you need at your home to have you better operate? Because it looks like this thing's going to go on for a little while. And, you know, that was sort of our reaction. So I'm thinking maybe it's the idea of flexibility, planning flexibility into your number one asset, which is your people.
Yeah, I think thinking smart about it, too, of what can you do in the short term that's going to pay long-term dividends. Like you said, getting that equipment at someone's house or whatever it might be. I mean, we didn't really know how long things were going to be shut down for. And honestly, I mean, we're still pretty shut down now, and we're almost going on 2 years of, you know, at least the first lockdown in the Chicagoland area. So, I mean, it's not going anywhere anytime soon, but if you can do those little things up front, that's just going to set you up for long-term success.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think experience or timing is something too. I mean, I know when this started, I immediately thought of 2008. You know, I thought of the economic downturn. I thought of, you know, 9/11. And I will tell you now, so I would say on the timeline of our firm, we've seen three major, I mean, obviously all sorts of minor incidents, but three major incidences that had impact on the business. You know, the first being 9/11. I mean, that was like almost immediate in like a sort of a shotgun. I mean, literally the next day after 9/11, we had companies calling, pulling POs, saying, hey, we're just going to take a pause here. So that was immediate. The economic downturn, you know, that was kind of a year of people just really jockeying for understanding where their business was, where their budgets were. So that was more drawn out. And, you know, there were more RFPs. There were people really minding their P's and Q's a little more than they usually do. And the funny thing is there's very little similarity in those three incidences, at least in how it impacted our company. I'm sure there are others that maybe it was a little different experience. But then this one was really a fracture in the labor markets. It's like, well, how are we gonna work remotely all the time and run our staff meetings and do the things that allow us to run the business 100% remotely? And for us, that was really the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, we're talking project-wise, too, of, you know, in 9/11, stuff's getting pulled immediately. I mean, this one, I think, is kind of the opposite of everyone's, like, we need to translate all of this COVID-related material right now. So I think, I mean, for us, at least, that was a big lift in business out of something negative, you know, something positive came out of it. We did have a few clients kind of pull back and say, hey, you know, we can't translate this or that anymore. But I think, you know, it's a very much a net positive in the amount of work coming through. And like you said, kind of dealing with the supply chain issues of having enough, one, project managers to deal with all the projects, and then two, translators. They were getting busier and busier as the pandemic wore on. So just trying to keep up with the demand that we had was definitely a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, certain parts of the business went down, but others, you know, went up quite dramatically. And haven't really declined since then, which is interesting. Moving on to the next topic and our last topic for the day is training and support for your team. So when I was thinking about this and how training is such an integral part, and I mean training about everything, you know, obviously the state of Illinois allows or requires us to do sexual harassment training every year. I know a lot of organizations do that, but you know, last year doing some unconscious bias and some racism training, and I know this year we're looking at more sort of what we call sharpening the saw sort of training, like customer service and you know, pricing initiatives and, you know, different types of training like that. You know, is the role of ISO or other regulatory bodies on the requirements and, you know, how to best support your culture? So for like us, since we have three ISO registrations, there's certain... They don't really tell us what we need to train on, but there has to be sort of a component on, you know, how are you getting better every year? And I do think that training's a big part of it. I know a lot of people complain about training. Oh, I don't want to do that training. But when it comes down to it, if it's something that helps you do your job a little bit better, I think in the end there's less pushback over it, I think. That's my idea.
Yeah, even, I mean,
Patrick's going to tell me, yeah, no, we didn't like any of that. I don't know. Tell me.
No, I'm reading your bullet point with a completely different mindset of what we're going to talk about. So I'm going to cover what I was thinking.
Let's hear it. Yeah.
I was thinking that, you know, with everyone working virtually, training is a lot more difficult. Because before, yeah, you just like, hey, roll your chair over to my desk and watch what we're doing, and here's your training. But now it's, you know, you have to set up a call, you have to screen share, you have to only use one screen while you're screen sharing. So, I think it's definitely a testament to people who have started working virtually. Like, they've never been in an office where they're able to train on the fly, just screen sharing. Because, I mean, I do kind of miss that of just like I said, hey, come on, roll over here. I'm going to show you what I'm doing. You know, this counts as your training because you're going to have to do this a bunch, you know, going forward. So I think that having a system in place to do training virtually, especially for new people, is going to just set you up for long-term success.
Yeah, hey, that is a good take on that. I'm glad you came at it a different direction. Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, my gosh, and you saw the boom of sort of these self-enrichment programs as well over the pandemic, like Masterclass, right? You know, that came out, and boy, everybody was signing up for Masterclass or, you know, doing some things to, it's like, all right, I'm home all this time. I can't go in. Like, in the heart of the lockdown when it was really terrible, nobody was doing anything. Restaurants were closed. Theaters were closed. You know, people were looking for ways to connect and to feel some level of self-enrichment. So, you know, there's sort of the that sort of thing, which is very personal, but then also from a business perspective. And gosh, I mean, I think we've onboarded 9 people virtually since the start of this thing. And you're right. It's not always easy. It's pretty challenging to do that. Though I will tell you, at least for me personally, because I'm definitely, even though we've been a little bit virtual, I always love the time in the office. I love connecting with people, with our team in real time, and not over, like you say, not over a Zoom call. But it's really sort of allowed us to sort of kind of lifted an encumbrance and said, hey, we can have an, our CTO can be in Australia. That's totally cool. He's full time and he's there, and our vendor manager's in Italy, and, one of our project managers is in Argentina, and we've hired in different spots across the United States. And I think there was sort of an awakening with a lot of companies, not just ours, to say, maybe having a little bit more distributed workforce isn't all that terrible.
Yeah. And the key with that, though, is like you said, you need to have that training and support system in place to help them, because, now for downtime, let's say previously working in an office, if you have downtime, you'd go around and ask anyone if there's anything they can show you for training. Now it's like, well, do I just sit there and stare at my screen? Do I try and set up a screen record? So I think having that support system in place is just going to make everyone more successful.
Yeah, and I think it also puts, it underlines everything we talked about this whole time, right? It's having the right people. Because if you have the wrong people, they're going to be like, awesome, I can hide now for 2 hours and
Or get another job.
Yeah, right. That was a common thing, too. That was a really interesting article in the Wall Street Journal about people that had 2 or 3 gigs. It's like, holy cow, how are they doing that? But yeah, you are 100% right. And if you have the right people, they're going to be looking for things. How can I help? What can I do? That's certainly important. Well, Patrick, as we tend to do in every episode of Translation Confidential, what is your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, I think of there was something, I'm going to quote myself here, to just keep it all consistent. it was the idea of, garbage in, garbage out. On the flip side of that, if you have really positive and great inputs into any system, no matter what it is, your outputs are going to be good too. So, like we're talking about people specifically here. So if you hire good people, they're going to do good work. Your clients are going to be happy. It just works its way down the line. So really realizing that you really need to get it right at the start of that process, so that by the end of the process, there's no problems, no questions, no surprises. So, hiring great people there's no downside basically to it.
I like that, Patrick. For me, it's the impact of culture. I always hang my hat on that. And, the funny thing is I think, we were working on culture before it was cool to work on culture. And I think that that's a strength of our company. And I know a lot of others as well. The big idea behind that is, hey, how about let's just be good people, right? Let's treat people like we want to be treated and everything works out. But now we have a formal program around it. And I think that that's really, really important for organizations that are trying to for employee retention and employee prosperity, keeping everyone happy. I think that makes a lot of sense. So for me, that's the big item. That's it for this show, Patrick. Any final points before we sign off?
No, it's definitely exciting to see. We mentioned a few times that I did leave Argo a few weeks ago, but it's exciting to see what's going on after I've left. It seems like the growth train is still plowing through, so that's definitely exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you for that, Patrick, and thank you everyone for tuning in for this episode of Translation Confidential. This is Peter and Patrick signing off.